Welcome to Get Over It, the Consciousness Transforming Podcast for Exceptional 21st Century Living. We have a very special show today. We're going to be talking about autism, not just child autism, but autism on the autism spectrum for adults. This is a very important show because so many adults may be autistic and they were never diagnosed. So if what we're talking about sounds like you, contact your health provider or your mental provider and see, you know, what the next step is. Because, you know, we're all in this to heal together. And I think that Judd Morrow, who is my guest today, will be sharing a lot of insightful information. And his book is Why Does Daddy Always Look So Sad? Now, the information shared on Get Over It uses intuitive and pragmatic insight to help you shift your consciousness to break through the blocks and release energy that is no longer needed. Yes, we're going to help you let go of the BS that has been holding you back. But you guys know I always ask the question, are you truly ready to? And by the way, folks, BS is belief system. Now, a bit about me for my new listeners. Intuitive since birth, I'm a third-generation intuitive with over 3 decades of experience supporting people to break through the blocks along their path. I'm a strategist for personal and professional transformation, revealing cutting-edge information that enables you to prosper and thrive. I spent 25 successful years in corporate America as an executive sales professional, and I'm the founder of Healing Visions Ministries and the Northern California Children's Education Network, a 501c3 nonprofit. I also author 2 books. I provide consultations and healings in all areas of life that heal the mind-body-spirit connection, allowing you to live your very best life. My clients tell me that I keep it real while providing them with accurate information to assist them along their journey as a spirit living a human existence. But they also say, if you really don't want to know, don't ask Monique. And bless you, by the way, Jude. My background includes a doctorate in metaphysics, Reiki master teacher, ordained minister, and clinical hypnotherapist. So whether you are stressed, depressed, or possessed, I can help. To find out more about me and the services I offer, go to my website, and that's MoniqueChapman.com. And I invite you to like me on Facebook and follow me on Twitter and LinkedIn. My guest today, Jude Morrow, presented with communication and social difficulties early in life, which led to a diagnosis of Asperger-type autism at the age of 11. Despite having educational challenges, Jude progressed through secondary school and graduated from the University of Ulster with an honors degree in social work in 2012. Jude now works as a social worker and is a motivational speaker and advocate for all things autism. When not speaking, writing, or social working, Jude loves spending time with his son Ethan, enjoying the outdoors, cooking, and reading. And you can check him out at his website, and that is judemorrow.com. Again, judemorrow.com, and his book, Why Does Daddy Always Look So Sad? Welcome, Jude.
Oh, hello, Monique. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Oh, I am so happy to be able to do this. Your book, How Is Why Daddy Always Looks So Sad, helpful for those facing disabilities?
Well, from a specific standpoint, I am autistic, and I just noticed in time that there just weren't enough perspectives given by people who love being autistic every day, like me. And whenever I was young, I hated the fact that I was different. I hated that I was viewed so differently by teachers and friends and colleagues and so on. So I thought that I would give my take on what being autistic is like every day, and it's something that autistic people can relate to. I mean, since the book's released last month, I've had so many autistic people and advocates and even parents say that they understand a little more what their children are going through in schools and what being autistic is actually like, because there's so many conceptions out there of what autism is and how it affects people. However, from my point of view, I wanted to use my autistic voice to say what autism is actually like and even trying to dispel some myths along the way.
Okay, so let's get right into it. What is autism? And then I hear talk of the autism spectrum. So could you address both of those?
Well, I will address both of those. The first thing with autism, autism is classed from a medical standpoint as a neurodevelopmental disorder, and there's two strands and two definitions to what autism is. I mean, you have the medicalized textbook version that autism is a developmental disorder with obsessive and repetitive behaviors and not being able to regulate emotion, not being able to make eye contact or make friends easily. However, that's the language that I was brought up with, and it really lowered my self-esteem and my self-worth because it was so discoverable. Now, I would view being autistic as simply a different neurotype, as in it's a different way of thinking, it's a different way of being, it's a different way of processing information. Because autistic people are the minority, it's so easy to cast aside what isn't like the general society at large. And for me, being autistic is being a driven and passionate individual, more so than anything, because yes, while there are very well-documented setbacks of autism, and whenever you say the word autism to people, they automatically think of the negative, but some of the most driven and talented people ever to have lived were autistic as well. So for me, most importantly, autism is a gift. And not, it is not a learning disability. It is not a condition which is solely set aside for those with lower cognitive ability. It's just a simply different neurotype.
Yes. I think the brain is wired a certain way, and, you know, you still can thrive. I mean, you have a degree, you have graduated college, you're a social worker. I shared with you before the show that my youngest son was diagnosed with severe severe dyslexia. Well, yeah, because he doesn't, you know, show it, so it's like, I forget. But severe dyslexia, and it was very difficult going through school and getting the services for him that he needed. But fortunately, his mother can be a big pain in the ass, and I got what I wanted for him. And he went on to graduate high school. He has a master's degree now, and he's teaching high school, so it can be done. And I like what you said. You said it's not a learning disability. What I call it is learning differently. We're all wired a little bit differently, and I love the fact that you're not saying it's a disability and people can't do. You're more of a champion of can doing. Can you share with us what your educational experience was like, especially in the younger grades where parents might not be aware or wanting to admit that there's something a little bit different?
Well, my educational experience has two different strands of thought. The one that plagued me for the first 25 years is that I just wasn't like everybody else. I felt that I was disabled, that I was different, even though my intellect was very high, my academic ability was very high. I had a classroom assistant follow me around everywhere in school from when I was 5 right up until I was 16. By the end of mandatory education here, I had those challenges. I found it difficult to make friends. I didn't feel that I was pretty much wanted anywhere or fit in anywhere. That was my experience up until I was about 25 years old. And then after that, what I did realize that my education was one victory after another, because as autism and Asperger syndrome became more widely known, people were quite accepting, people were quite accommodating, and I really did have one victory after another, because in the mid-1990s, it wasn't common practice for autistic children to attend mainstream schools. So that was a victory in itself, and then being able to progress and partake in activities that other children did, like particularly speech and drama and sports, and being able to complete school and go on to qualify as a social worker and work as a social worker. And, I mean, I did have a lot of scars from my education that deeply affected me into adulthood. But whenever I changed the lens of how I reflected on my education, my outlook completely changed to the point where I even look back on it more fondly now than what I ever did.
Okay, so, you know, at age 11, you were diagnosed with Asperger type autism. Are there other types of autism?
Yes, there are. There would be autism that is more closely aligned to learning disabilities. And that's one thing, unfortunately, more so from the United States side of things, that a lot of people would believe with autism to be, or would even use the word to describe a classic learning disability, even though they can exist side by side, but they are technically very different, as is within my case. You would have savant syndrome, which would be another subtype of autism, which is very, very high intellect and memory processing skills, but another correlation would be a lower functionality and completing daily tasks. So that would be, that's a quite a rare one. I've in all my speaking tour, I've only ever met two diagnosed savant autistics. It's quite a rare one, but we did kind of talk earlier about the autism spectrum. I know you'd asked about it, and sorry I didn't answer it then, so I'll go on to it now. The autism spectrum is not like a continuum. It's not a sliding scale of severity. For example, being low, you can't be low on the autistic spectrum. You're either autistic or you're not, and there's so many variables. I would compare the autistic spectrum. People say to me, whereabouts are you on the autistic spectrum? I would say I was in the same place that you, you know, particularly a female, I would say, well, the same place you were on the pregnancy spectrum. I mean, it's such a varied range. For example, I have different strengths and weaknesses to other people. And that's what I kind of want to get across, is that the spectrum itself isn't like a sliding scale of there's people higher on the spectrum or lower on the spectrum. It doesn't really work that way. It's so diverse.
Okay. Why don't you share with us what advice would you give to parents today who may have a child or several children that are someplace on this autism spectrum, but they're seeing something a little bit different, but they're not willing to acknowledge it?
Well, whenever I was very young, there wasn't any specific autism support groups for children or adults. That just wasn't really the end thing then. My advice would be to allow the children to meet other children like them. I know that denial is a big, big theme, and that's one that I did go through for the vast majority of my life. I mean, the first 25 years, I didn't want to acknowledge it. I didn't want to believe in it. But even now, I find a lot of comfort when I meet other people like me, because you don't feel so alone in the world. I mean, home is where the heart is. Home is where the family is. But I knew I wasn't quite like my sister, Emily, or my parents. So as time went on, I did enjoy the company of autistic people and being in like-minded company. And I mean, everybody wants to feel included, especially for me as a teenager. Everybody wants to feel included or part of something. And I mean, play to their strengths. If there's any clubs or groups with their special interests, whether that's photography or chess or sports or whatever it may be, to encourage them to join those things. And at the same time, I hear a lot of people saying that, you know, human beings, you know, we are social beings. And again, some are not. I think a lot of parents hold on to, oh, they don't make any friends or they don't mix with people. And that's fine at the same time, because it's equally as distressing trying to make someone do something that they're not comfortable in doing. For example, Tanika, if you and I were standing by a pool and you couldn't swim, I mean, the vast majority of the world's population can swim. That's like me saying to you, Tanika, just jump in anyway. Come on, let's go. You'll be fine. You'll not drown, I promise. It's the same thing.
Okay. Folks, we're speaking with Jude Morrow. His book is Why Does Daddy Always Look So Sad? And it's a book on autism. It's his personal journey, but also in the book you can be able to read it. It's a very easy read. You could read it in one setting. And you can get information that might help you or someone else in your family. And the biggest takeaway that I had from this book is that the autism is not a dis-ease. It is a different process of navigating in the world. And if you think about it, we all kind of navigate differently in the world. So it would be, you know, to your best interest to get some information on this, because you know what, it's more prevalent than people think, and you could help out a family member or a friend. Jude, you have a son who's young at this stage. Do you ever worry or just look closely to see if he has any autistic traits?
Absolutely not. He is not autistic. He's not like me. He went through his developmental milestones at the regular rate as the medical textbooks dictate. I didn't. Ethan walked at maybe around 13 months. For me, it was closer to two. His language skills were very good, even as a 10 and 11-month-old baby. And he doesn't have the educational struggles or the social struggles that I had back whenever I was a child. And sometimes I actually pity the fact that he's not autistic, because, I mean, I'm autistic. I'm in the club, and to me, we are the enlightened ones. And I would never ever worry about him being autistic. In fact, I pity him that he isn't, so that he can't share this beautiful gift with me. But he understands me. He gets me. He knows I'm not like him. He knows I like things done in a certain way, and because I like things around the house done properly and to my exact specifications, I suppose I could say that I have a lot of buttons and Ethan has a lot of fingers.
Okay, that works well. Okay, well, if your son understands you so much, why the title? Why does Daddy always look so sad? Because, I mean, I don't hear sadness in your voice, and when you go to your website, judgemarl.com, you don't see sadness there. So why the sadness in the title?
Whenever I grew up through school, I was always so used to having a complete control over my days and my destiny, so to speak. I picked my own career. I worked well in third-level education and life in general. Whenever I discovered I was going to be a father, that was a huge life change. And whenever I was in my early 20s, being autistic was something that I thought primarily affected children, because whenever people think of autism, they think of little children. And now I'm a very large, grown-up man. And that's not a perspective that a lot of people think of. And I didn't even think of, you know, the whole autistic thing back then. I thought that was something I'd left behind. And as Ethan was rapidly growing up and learning to walk and use the bathroom and talk and eat and so on, it was like every day was so different for me. To the point where I couldn't cope, where I found it extremely difficult and distressing, having every day being so different that my routine was completely gone. And although parenthood gives everyone a complete change of routine, some feel changes of routine a lot more acutely than others, like me, to the point where he could realize it. And Ethan actually asked my mother the now hopefully iconic question in literature, why does Daddy always look so sad?
Ah, okay. I get it. That makes a lot of sense. Do you consider autism a gift?
Yes, I do. I mean, if you look in the English dictionary definition of autism, it says it is a neurological condition characterized by obsessive and repetitive behavior. And if we look at classical cases of autism, Asperger's, whatever it may be, the same as me, I mean, that's like saying, well, Einstein was obsessed with general and special relativity, and Stanley Kubrick was obsessed with making movies, and Mozart was obsessed with creating beautiful music, and Michelangelo was obsessed with creating the ceiling of the Sistine Chapel. That drive and that determination, that autistic gift is what spurred them to be the best that they could be and put a stamp on the world that would last forever. So in that way, yes, it is a gift, because of the trials and tribulations that they faced in their personal lives and upbringing. Anyone would have given up, but that burning love for something that you're interested in that people would call obsessions, because in global society, if you are if you're not autistic, you are an expert. If you are autistic, you are obsessed. So let's break that one barrier down, because we don't look back fondly at those people. Oh, they were completely obsessed with what their talents were, and it should never be that case for any other people or children going forward.
Okay. Now, as an adult, what are some of your strongest support outlets? Now, you're in in Ireland, so you could, of course, talk about there, but if you know of any others that are international, I'd appreciate hearing about them.
Well, I'm a member of quite a lot of autistic groups, in both in Ireland, the UK, the US, everywhere. And I love talking to other people like me. They're so easily found. And it kind of ties into another point I love making on every show that I'm on, is with a diagnosis, a medical diagnosis from a specialist or consultant or whoever it may be, it only serves to do one thing, and that is tell parents or adults what they already know. Because I've never encountered anyone in the thousands I've spoken to live, anyone who's believed their child to be autistic and been wrong. So I think the first port of call, especially now in times like COVID-19, where, accessibility is all digital now, to seek out those groups and for autistic people to meet other people like them, and for parents to meet other parents in the same position as them. And, I mean, kind of togetherness is as good a therapy in practice as, any drug on the planet. Mm-hmm. So it's something I recommend, that togetherness, that unity, and that feeling of belonging is something that can be really, really helpful in a world and having an existence where you feel entirely alone. Trust me, I've been there.
Okay. Well, you know, at this time of the recording, Ireland is on lockdown and the U.S. is going through this funky thing of some states opening and some not. But for those who are not and they're stuck in the house, what advice do you have for for the parents of children with autism, I should say, to kind of help keep them entertained, because they need to be sometimes busy, and also for the adults, because I've noticed some adults, they're just having a really hard time, and I think maybe some of, you know, what you can share would help people be able to stay in place a little bit longer and feel good about it.
Yeah, I actually wrote an article about this recently for Thrive Global, a bit of a survival guide for the COVID-19 lockdown. And the first thing would be is that for nearly every autistic person that I've met, and myself included, has a special interest, something that they love doing. And this is the time to perfect that craft, whether it's photography or art or making music, whatever it may be. It has a twofold effect. It allows the autistic person or child to be busy and devote more time doing what they love, and it can be something that parents can bond over. Maybe this time can be used to turn that special interest into something that can be made into a career, because I've been seeing a lot of autistic art and music on social media, and especially in the last 6 or 7 weeks since the lockdowns globally started. And there's a real sense of perfecting the craft to the point where it can be shared out, and it has that digital platform now because everyone's online these days. So it's a good time to plan ahead and look to the future and maybe use those special interests to make a living and to really take that time to bond with your autistic child, because bonding is a very difficult thing. I think my parents at times found it hard to bond with me and keep the routine. Although they loved me dearly, I was at school most of the day, and they still had to do the usual thing of, you know, coming home, doing homework, eating dinner, getting ready for bed, and then repeat the next day through Monday through to Friday. So this is a time to really delve into their interests. And whenever autistic people talk about their special interests, they just bloom like spring flowers, because conversation naturally can be quite difficult. So it's a time to really get to know one another at this time, because there's more time together to do it.
Okay, well, in your book, you said something that really stood out to me, and you said, "I couldn't understand why I was a risk to myself and other children with my obsessions at the time." Talk to us more about that.
Well, I was pretty unable to regulate my emotions in a healthy way. I harbored a lot of frustration if I felt that people weren't listening to me. I kind of learned more so as an adult that whenever I worked for mental health services during my social work career, that one of the prime causes for psychoses is telling the truth and not being believed. I think a lot of people felt I wasn't equal to them, or I was lesser than them. I suppose that's the way I felt in my mind. And at that time, as a young child, I did find it hard to regulate myself, and it did translate into verbal and physical aggression at times. Although I did become a lot calmer and a lot more gentler in my teenage years and adulthood, it was very much a problem back then. And it always left me with a real sense of guilt and shame. And it's just something that eventually I grew out of, but it was very difficult at the time. I had potential to be quite volatile as a child, and it's something that kind of cast me aside even more. And I mean, you can blame I can blame being autistic all I like, but my parents always told me to take responsibility for my own actions, and that it would never be an excuse, and nor has it ever been.
Good for you, because it really shouldn't be. You're just living your life and you live differently. Now, on your website, judmorrow.com, I went to your blog, and what stood out there front and center was symbols of autism and neurodiversity. So, first tell us what the symbols of autism are, and then explain neurodiversity, please.
Well, there's a lot of symbols pertaining to autism. The first one, the most widely known one, is the puzzle piece. And that was the symbol that, even at the start of my writing career, whenever using it in social media, it's a symbol that I used. I can admit that, because it was so widely recognized, it was so well known, and the single puzzle piece was a symbol pretty much devoted to autism and autistic people. But as time has gone on, and I've been on more podcasts, more radio interviews, more media appearances and speaking tours and so on, a lot of the people in the autistic community have a problem with that puzzle piece. And the slogan is "People, not puzzles," that we are not enigmas that need to be solved, and we are autistic, and acceptance should be mandatory and prevalent across all society. We're not something that needs to be solved. We are people just like you, and we can live with you side by side, and we are a happy, proud people, the autistic community. So that puzzle piece is something that is an issue. But the neurodiversity movement has the rainbow infinity symbol. And the neurodiversity movement seeks to promote a more social model of autistic understanding, instead of, and that being autistic and having an autism are not in need of a cure or treatment or help, or in that sort of way. It's not something that needs to be eradicated, so to speak, from the world. Because I mean, the autistic thinkers, the progressive autistic thinkers, it's not just in the last 100 years that being autistic has been a thing. It's been a thing most likely from the start of mankind, whenever we learned to walk upright. I'm sure it was the autistic Neanderthal that was obsessive about creating sparks with rocks that caused fire, or the autistic architect that designed the Great Pyramids of Giza or the Hanging Gardens of Babylon. There is a case for autism having existed for millennia before it's become medically prominent like it has now. Even in the Maori language, which is an ancient language, which is spoken in the South Pacific, Samoa and Fiji and New Zealand and some places like that, and their word for autism is a word that was first cited, I think, around the 10th century BC, in which there were children that were slightly different in their tribes. And the definition is as it was then and still is now. I can't say the word, so don't ask me to try. And it translates as in his or her own time and space, which is a beautiful definition, rather than neurodevelopmental disorder or obsessive behavior and antisocial and so on. And that's where the kind of neurodiversity strand seems to kick in.
Okay. There's, you know, unfortunately in this day and age, there's a lot of people who scam people, you know, for their own gain. Could you direct us to some place where if someone either is an adult dealing with this and they're having that aha moment as they're listening to this, or their child is exhibiting signs of autism, is there one particular website besides your own that you can recommend for people to go to get true concrete information? And if not,
I'm a very big fan of the National Autistic Society. I'm also a huge fan of the Autistic Self-Advocacy Network, which very much promotes neurodiversity and aims to step away from the medical model / need for a cure and all that kind of talk that goes on. And the one thing that I will take the time to say that I feel I have a moral duty to say this is that in every circumstance, vaccinate your children, because I'm autistic and I live with it absolutely fine. If I had have contracted the measles, I might not be speaking to you now. And there's such a rise in preventable childhood diseases that are now, as we speak, killing children around the globe. So it's a topic I always stayed away from, the whole anti-vax conversation, but it's a conversation that I'm now starting to realize needs to happen. And now that I have a platform and likewise through yours here and now, that is my opinion. That is something that the world needs to get on board with and get on board with very quickly, especially in a time like that we're in now.
Oh, most definitely, and I completely agree with you. It's very important to vaccinate the children. You know, some people say, oh, well, I just can't do this. I worked with one couple who literally went to blows in the hospital after the woman gave birth to their son because the dad didn't want the vaccinations and the mom did, and, you know, they were fighting, and it was horrible. It's really important, folks, to, you know, protect yourselves, protect our children, because we don't know what's coming down the pike later, and at least get them protected for what we are aware of and can present. So thank you very much, Jude, for bringing that forward and sharing it with us. What are your plans for advocacy work in the future, and do you work with people one-on-one, or do they just read your site and take it from there?
Yes, I do. People can contact me through the website page. I've assisted in advocacy for autistic children in schools to get them the support and guidance that they need, which I love doing. And that's what basically I trained in. I mean, before becoming involved in the autistic circles, I mean, I'm a qualified social worker and I have been doing that for the last 8 years. So I love doing that. I ask everyone to get in touch with me and speak to me, and I love hearing other people's stories as well as my own. I had a week-long speaking and engagements tour in the San Francisco Bay Area, although that has been postponed due to COVID-19. So I'm hoping to get back over to the States, be most likely next year, I would imagine, to meet other groups and meet other people like me and hear other people's perspectives and get my own speaking tour back up and running here, which actually started in January. And the last date that we had was the 6th of March. So I'm hoping to get the remaining dates here back up and running and even get myself back out there for bookings and events in 2021 and 2022. So I'm just looking to the future and planning and getting everything in order to spread the positive autistic message around the world and resume the plan that I had.
Okay. Well, when you're back in the San Francisco Bay Area, give me a call ahead of time because I'm in that area. I'd love to come out and support you and meet you.
Absolutely, I will, and I know that what I have learned is that a lot of people say that as a pleasantry, and you better believe, Monique, whenever I'm in San Francisco Bay, your phone will ring, and you will be doing things. I
Yay.
will say, "Oh, hello, this is Jude Morrow." Let and yeah, I mean,
Yeah, well,
let's have lunch. I will do it.
okay, well, I don't put BS out there, and that BS is bullshit. So if you contact me, I will definitely join you because, as I said, I had a child with dyslexia. So, and my nonprofit, it's very important to me, something near and dear to my heart. So I look forward to meeting you when you do make it back over to this side of the pond, so to speak. So, Jude, our time is up. I truly appreciate your time and attention. Thank you so much for being the guest today and sharing about autism.
Absolutely. I've been absolutely delighted. And I would say to everyone that please reach out to me through the website. I love answering questions about the book and talking about it and hearing other people's stories. So I want the book to be as interactive an experience as I can possibly make it. And I have answered every query that people have asked me so far. So don't be afraid. Come forward.
Well, folks, there you go. If you're struggling or wondering about autism, here's a point of contact to at least start you on your journey. And trust me, it's a very rich journey when you learn something that you have not been aware of before. And parents, if you're thinking that there's something, just not quite the way that you thought it would be with your child, investigate. Don't be afraid. Don't be ashamed. There's no shame in the game, okay? Your child is just processing differently, which is great because they have other talents. So, Jude, thank you. The audience, thank you for being with me. And remember, folks, the most important choice that you can make is what you choose to make important. And consider making the masterful choice of learning about autism and the Asperger spectrum. Abundant blessings, light and love to all. Agape.